Okay, welcome to the segment of headlines. My name is Rabbi David Grossman, founder of the Beis Chabad Halacha Center, a center which provides halachic research, service, education to the greater United States. And I must say that tonight's topic, commerce and Shabbos, one of the most relevant, you know, out of the hundreds of halacha questions that we deal with, business and Shabbos are definitely one of the most common. Our Zaydis had issues, challenges with Shmir Shabbos. If you would take off on Sunday, the cliche was don't bother coming back on Monday. If you take off on Saturday on Shabbos. Today, in the Golden Medina, Baruch Hashem, we have rights. And obviously, no one's going to be fired due to their religious restrictions, the religious commitments. Shabbos, one of the fundamental facets of our religion. Shabbos, the Makor HaBracha, the single inyan, the single thing which is compared to a person as a Mechal Shabbos, but for Hesia, it has the worst, one of the most severe. He's compared to an Apikoiris. One of the fundamentals of our religion, obviously. On the other hand, we have certain situations which, you know, although we don't have the challenges that we had of the years back, but we have certain situations that require some type of arrangement. They require certain hospitals, for example, healthcare, nursing homes, places which need to function on Shabbos. It's imperative. There's no other way around it. People own residential buildings in far out cities, and they can't tolerate not being available. You rent units to people who are not Shomer Shabbos, who do not have the considerations of Shabbos, and you just can't say the snow has to get plowed. There's an elderly woman on a high floor, and the elevator is broken on Shabbos. Something has to be able to be done on Shabbos. And, you know, in these cases, it's important. And these Baruch Hashem, these issues were dealt with throughout the ages. These questions have new realities to them, but these are questions that have been dealt with for many, many years. We also have some self-imposed challenges. You know, today's world of commerce presents itself like a myriad of opportunities that weren't imaginable decades ago. You know, with these opportunities are many new halachic issues that arise. You know, the area of e-commerce. In the olden days, a person had a shop in the Lower East Side. He either had it open or closed. You know, Shabbos, Shomer Shabbos would close the store and the store would be closed. Today, you know, we can be sitting at our Shabbos table or taking an afternoon nap, Shabbos afternoon, and things happen by themselves. You talk about websites and marketing campaigns, payment processing systems, call centers that are open, fulfillment. Things are just happening in the area of e-commerce, in the area of, you know, Amazon, eBay, these types of infrastructures. And, you know, the technology is new. The technology is all cutting edge, and it's the way of the future. But we have to incorporate the age-old principles of Shmir Shabbos. We have to apply those as well, and we have to figure out what is mutter and what the person has to stay away from. So with us tonight is two of the leading foremost experts in the field. We are very proud that Rav Yosef Kushner has agreed to join us. He's one of the Beis Chabad active Rabbonim and Poskim, who deal with a lot of the Shabbos issues. He actually, as they say, quote-unquote, wrote the book. He's the author of the now famous book, Commerce on Shabbos, by Feldheim. And he happens to be the son-in-law of Hagoyin Rav Shlomo Miller Shlita from Toronto, one of the leading poskim of our generation. Rav Kushner has the ability and uses the ability to consult with his father-in-law, with Rav Miller, and work out these very, very complex and very important issues. And we were able to have a few words with him today, and try to get our hands around these issues and how they affect us on a broader level. Business owners, real estate owners, healthcare facility owners have to deal with this on a grand scope, but also the day-to-day websites, orders, and mailing, and other things we'll get into, how we can effectively be mechaber the Shabbos and be committed to Shmir Shabbos 100%, and yet have ways that we'll be able to really function. These businesses can function on Shabbos. So it is our pleasure to introduce Rav Yosef Kushner. So Rabbi Kushner, thank you for joining us.
Good luck, Rabbi Gross, and thank you for having me.
Okay, so I understand you've been dealing with this for many years. How did you get involved in this, miktsoya, this part of halachic research? You wrote the sefer on the topic. Yeah,
So it's interesting. Like many good things, it came by accident. A few years ago, a close relative of mine came to me. And he had a very basic question. He was selling on eBay, and he wanted to know what the ramifications were, specifically B'negei Shabbos. He didn't have an exact idea of what the Shilas were, but he figured if I'm selling on Shabbos, if auctions are concluding on Shabbos, he figured there was an issue. And he asked me, and I did basic research for him, and I called my father-in-law, Shlomo Miller Shlita, and I remember the time I called him, and he said, I asked him, can a Yid conclude his auction on eBay on Shabbos? And he said to me, what's eBay? And it really surprised me for two reasons, really, because usually you would think my father-in-law was one of the senior paiskim in North America, and I would have thought at that point someone would have asked a question. And really, two things became clear at that point. Point one was that the Rabbonim, as business was evolving and as business is transforming into a more of a digital age and more of a automated age, I realized that the Rabbonim kind of were not staying in the loop of how business practices were and what the halachic ramifications were. And more importantly, the reason why they weren't staying in the loop is because people were not asking questions. The reason why Rabbonim would be involved is because questions were being asked. If my father-in-law at that point, let's say it would be 8 years ago, had never heard of eBay, that means nobody ever asked this question to him, and or Bonham ever asked this question. These questions never filtered up to what eBay was. And at that point, I really started getting involved in understanding the technical aspects of the technical side of things, as well as the halachic aspects. And Baruch Hashem, over the last few years, I really have seen, ever since the Sefer came out, I've seen Baruch Hashem. I believe there is somewhat of a renaissance in this space. People are learning to ask questions. People are not scared to ask questions. And I get they're asking their Rabbanim, and then those Rabbanim are asking Rabbanim that are maybe more involved, but have more of a knowledge on the technical aspect as well as the halachic intricacies. And I believe Baruch Hashem, we have turned the corner in this regard. People are becoming much more aware that if you have a business that's running on Shabbos, there very likely will be issues that needs to be addressed. And it's being addressed, and that's a Baruch Hashem, it's a very fulfilling thing.
Let's jump right into the shilas that we're going to be discussing with regards to business. So how does it work if somebody owns a business that can't shut down for Shabbos? Like we mentioned, nursing facilities or real estate management. We'll talk about maybe a little bit later. Senior home care, hotels. Hospitals, hospices, these things need to function on Shabbos. What are, first of all, like some of the halachic challenges? What are, if you can maybe classify for us, where these issues lie? What type of issue we're talking about halachically, and what the practical, pragmatic application might be for these questions? You know, then we can go into maybe some of the, maybe you can talk about some of the solutions. But what are the issues that arise?
So if a business is running on Shabbos, usually there'll be two primary challenges that the business owner will have to face. Problem number one would be that there are Gentiles, any Yehudim working for the Jewish owner on Shabbos. And with that, most people are familiar with the concept of Amir La'akam. Amir La'akam means that whatever a Yid cannot do, whatever malacha, whether it be Isser Torah, or an Isser Midarabonon, or a rabbinical Isser, any malacha that a Yid cannot do on Shabbos, he cannot instruct a Gentile, someone who's not instructed to keep Shabbos, he cannot instruct him to do it on his behalf. Now, if a person has workers, and his workers are doing malachas in his company for him, the first challenge he's going to face is Amir La'akum. The second challenge he would usually face is if there are revenues coming in to that business, and the revenues are being earned on Shabbos, that's what we call Schar Shabbos. Schar Shabbos is also Issur Midrabanan, and it forbids a Yid to profit and to make money, to earn money on Shabbos. It does not depend on when the money is received, it depends when the money is earned. Just like in a residential application, a person would not be allowed to babysit solely for Shabbos, just on Shabbos, and receive a payment for that. So on a commercial application, if a person has a nursing home, just we're talking about nursing homes, so I'll just go with that example. If a person has a nursing home, and he has a patient that's receiving therapy, for example, and somebody's paying for that therapy, the owner of the nursing home is receiving a payment. It would make no difference if it's directly the patient's paying or the insurance is paying. Or someone is paying for that therapy session. So there are proceeds and profits and revenues that are being earned on Shabbos that would be classified as Schar Shabbos. A Yid is not allowed to accept payment that was earned on Shabbos. Those are the two primary challenges that a Yid would have to face when his business is owned. Amir La'akum and Schar Shabbos. We're talking about the Yid is not working on Shabbos, Yid is home, Yid is not involved in this business, the Yid himself would be involved in the business, there'd be a myriad of problems, the man from Minatoy to the Midrabanan, depending on the case. But we're discussing when the Yid is home, he's singing Menucha V'Simcha, he's not involved, but on his behalf, Goyim are doing work, or money's being earned, those would be problems.
Mm-hmm. So and another issue with Schar Shabbos, which is dealt with in the Poiskim, is even receiving interest payments on money in the bank on Shabbos. There's different, you know, answers. There's Chuvas and Ramesha Feinstein, but that's also considered Schar Shabbos, earning money on Shabbos, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So, you know, we heard a lot about, you know, we know on Pesach what we do is we go to the Rav if we have Chametz in our possession, and we don't want to be over the Isra Bal Yeroa, Bal Yemotze. We sign the Shtar Mechira that we sell the Chametz to the Eini Yehudi, and basically, you know, some people are makri not to sell Chametz Gomer. There's different levels, but that's something that's put in place on Pesach. It's pretty widely accepted. How does that compare to basically doing the same thing on Shabbos, creating a Shtar Mechira to sell the business, which, you know, which I know many, many people have that set up. Like, how does that compare to the, I mean, these Yisurim that we're talking about here, the Schar Shabbos and Amir La'akam, are both Yisurim Derabbanon. Is that correct? Or Rabbinic Yisurim?
That's correct, yes.
So would it be sufficient to just simply sign the Shtar Mechira and sell the business to an Eini Yehudi on Shabbos?
Okay, so the short answer is no, it really would not be sufficient. And the reason for that is that when we go through the Rishonim and the Poskim, when we discuss Amir La'akum, it becomes very clear that the crux of the issue of Amir La'akum, the crux of the problem, is that it's forbidden to have a Gentile work a Daita d'Yisrael. And a Daita d'Yisrael means he's doing his work in his mind for the Yisrael, on the behalf of the Yisrael, who he considers his boss, so to speak. And Rav Moshe Feinstein is actually very clear about this, and he makes this point numerous times when he discusses Shtar Mechira, and he says that, and you could see he's kind of skeptical about the validity of the sale, and specifically on nursing homes, there might be questions on the validity of such a sale, because according to legally, the owner of the nursing home has to be licensed and has to be, you don't just take a fly-by-night contract and the person owns the nursing home. It doesn't work like that. But he makes this point, and he says, assuming that the sale is valid and there's no issues, and it's 100% owned by this new quote-unquote buyer, this Gentile buyer, he says that as long as the workers in the company who were previously working for this owner, this Yisrael, this owner, and now officially they're working for the new boss, as long as they, their mindset is still that this is my boss, the Yisrael is my boss, the Jewish owner who officially, quote-unquote, sold the business, he's my boss, and he hires and he fires, and he's the one who runs the show, so he is still working a Dayta Yisrael. And Ramesh makes this point, and he says, Me'ikar hadin, even if you sold it with such a mechanism, Me'ikar hadin, you did not do, halachically speaking, you didn't help yourself. And the reason is because if structurally the same structure is in place where the Gentiles are working for their boss, who they consider the Yisrael, their former boss, the former owner of the company, and usually when we do execute such a sale and we bring in somebody and we officially sign all business to a Gentile to say, you are now officially the owner of the business, we don't relinquish control, and that new quote-unquote owner does not have cannot just come in and start wrecking the business and hiring and firing and redoing things as he pleases. Usually, legally, it's under control how the seller, the former owner, the Jewish owner of the nursing home or whatever business we're selling, he retains control, 100% control of the company. He controls the money. He controls the operations. He controls the equity of the company, and he controls to a degree the workers. He's hiring them and he's firing them, and because of that, the workers are still working 100% a Dayta Yisrael, which means they're practically speaking, they're working for a yid. And because they're working for a yid, we would have that problem of Amir La'akum, of having a Gentile do work on behalf of a Jew, which is forbidden.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So it basically, it really boils down to the attitude and the
not
understanding.
Not so much the attitude, more of
the understanding of the employees, the perspective of the employees, who they view their real boss. That's
real. And really when we discuss how to structure a company that must remain open on Shabbos, this is the opinion of my father-in-law, Shlomo Miller, and I've heard this from others, and Rav Moshe really writes this, is that the angle we have to approach this is really from a management angle. And we have to angle in that there's a Gentile in management that has a stake in the management of the company and has a say in the management of the company, and he's going to be considered the direct day-to-day employer of the company, and there's ways to do that. It can get technical, and it, of course, depends on business to business how it's structured. And I believe later on, Rabbi Honeywax will be coming in and discussing this. He has a lot of experience in this field of technically setting up businesses. But from a general perspective, the proper way how someone has to conduct himself if he has a business that cannot shut on Shabbos is there has to be a restructuring of the company, and it's set up that the Gentiles understand that they're working for a Gentile, they're not working for a Yid, because for a Gentile to work at Dati Distral is really a problem.
Mm, very interesting. Okay, so that's we just touched on a person, a Jewish owner, and we're going to discuss, as you mentioned, Rabbi Shmuel Honeywax will be here a little bit later in the segment to discuss practically how to set up, various types of businesses, the different commendable and acceptable tools that are put into place to set up a person's business or other type of facility, to make sure that it's lechatchila, there's no issue of Mir al-Akam, Schar Shabbos, or the other issues that come. Mekach Memko we'll discuss a little bit later. Let's talk a little bit about Shutfis. Many people have partnerships, so let's say a 50-50 partnership with an Ein Yehudi. Does that make it more simple, more complicated? How does that affect our discussion today?
So that depends. If a person has a partner, that's discussed in the Gemara, it's discussed in the Pesachim. If a person has a partner and the partner wants to continue the operation of the business on Shabbos, that's very clear that is allowed, because if the Ein Yehudi is not instructed to keep Shabbos and he wants to operate the company, he's allowed to do that. And if the Jewish partner is going to benefit from the business running on Shabbos, it's also allowed. There might be an issue of Schar Shabbos, and depending on how it's structured, depending on how the business runs and how the payment comes in, there may or may not be a problem of Schar Shabbos. But from an Amir L'Akam standpoint, a partner that would like to continue running the company on Shabbos would be allowed to do so. The question is really is similar to what we discussed until now. The question is, it when there are workers in the company and the Jewish partner is really the director of operations and people understand that they work for the Jewish partner, so at that point, just because you have an equity partner who says, we want to continue running on Shabbos, that would be no different than if he'd be 100% equity owner because we sold him the business, but we have workers working for the Yid. So again, it depends how we structure the business. If the Gentile partner is involved in operations and he has a presence in the management of the company and he's going to be the boss to these workers, then 100% he can continue running the company on Shabbos.
Now, so what happens if employees understand that there's actually two individuals who call the shots over here? There's the Reb Yid and the Ein Yehudi that are both 50% and they're both involved at a pretty, you know, similar level. And when both of them walk down the hall, you know, all the employees, chapat sitter. Does it have to be that the Akum, the Ein Yehudi is solely managing, or it could be like a joint effort? Obviously, not on Shabbos, but during the week.
It's a good question. It's actually not 100% clear. There's a debate about this. What we try to do is we try to create a structure where even if the Jewish partner does have a presence in the company, the actual we could set up a structure where the actual hiring and the firing and the direct contact would be done through the partner. If we could have the partner being on the signing the checks, and we could have the Gentile partner I'm referring to, if we could have him being the direct hirer and direct firer, even if the Jew has a say in the business technically, if he sees something he doesn't like, what we do is we try to create a structure where he makes the referral to his partner, and he tells his partner, I would like this worker to be promoted or demoted. But what we do is the execution and the real day-to-day execution of the company would be done through the partner. Then people would understand that, you know, the operations is being run through the partner, and on Shabbos it is the partner's discretion to say he wants to keep the business open, especially since the Jewish partner would have zero presence specifically for Shabbos. People would understand no matter what happens, no matter what emergencies come up, there's no way the Jewish partner is being reached on Shabbos. He has no presence on Shabbos. So specifically, they'd understand that they have one boss, and that boss is the Gentile. But even really throughout the week and throughout the lifespan of the job, we should try as best as we can. We should try that they understand that their boss is the direct.
Oh, very interesting. So back to let's go a little bit back to the issue. So what would you recommend somebody has one of these businesses that simply can't shut down? Are they simply not allowed to own such a business, or
no? We're not here to shut down businesses. So again, we usually a nursing home, real estate companies, they have management companies, and the goal is as much as possible is to get these management companies under as much control as a Gentile that's running. It's inside management as possible. We set up a shtar with them, a contract that designates them first of all, they have a stake in management, and second of all, they have a day-to-day presence in hiring and firing, and it has to be done right. It just can't be done just as a general thing. It has to be done specifically, and it has to be done right. But the goal is in management is to get a management company under the control of a Gentile, and from an Amila Akum standpoint, this would be sufficient. There are other challenges. That's when you asked me about the minority partner, I said when specifically with Amir Akam, this would be a solution. A person owns a nursing home. There's a myriad of problems. You can't have chametz on Pesach, and serving treifas is forbidden. And a person who has a stake in a company, a person who's a partner in a company that owns chametz, even if he doesn't run the day-to-day operation, there would be a problem. But from a strictly Amir Akam standpoint, the goal would be is to have a Gentile presence in the management, Gentile control, somewhat control of management and the operations of the company.
Very interesting. Okay. So let's try to take a specific industry that has a lot of relevance to our discussion today and has a lot of of Yidden nationwide and worldwide are very heavily involved, the industry of real estate. Owning real estate, what would you say are the common challenges that face real estate management and owners of real estate that relate to our discussion today, to the Inyanei Shabbos?
Okay, so when we discuss real estate, there's a lot of different parts of real estate. There's building real estate and there's management real estate. Generally speaking, real estate is really different than nursing homes. Nursing homes must remain 100% operational on Shabbos. When you walk into a nursing home on Tuesday and when you walk into a nursing home on Shabbos, it doesn't look that much of a difference, and they can't. Real estate could somewhat close in Shabbos. If a person is building real estate, he should close for Shabbos. That's the truth. It should close down for Shabbos. There's really an issue with Marasayan. People see that besides the actual structure, how it is, people don't really know how you structure it. A person should not be building real estate in Shabbos.
Does it matter if it's where it's located?
It does matter where it's located, but if it's something which is really open and really befahesia, people would know, would get out when they're building. In general,
let me just clarify. You say that I'm not sure if we discussed what type of relationship you have with the person, with a builder, let's say.
Well, let's say you're doing a development, correct? So you have a contract. It could be technically be a goyish contract. A goyish contractor that sets his own schedule. He's not being paid per hour. He's not a skill yam. Maybe we'll get to that later. But there's different relationships you could have with a worker. One relationship you could have is a koblin. A koblin means the contractor. You pay him to do a job.
Similar to an independent contractor versus employee.
Employee,
I mean,
correct.
Similar, but
even an employee, you could pay.
It has different guidelines,
right.
But it's like a similar concept. Yeah.
Right. And when you have a skiryayim, someone who's paid per hour, that's much more chummer. That's very stringent. The person's not allowed to let any of his skiryayims, any of his day workers work on Shabbos. Now, if you have a development, you're developing real estate, and it's somewhat within the chum of Yidden, that work site should really be closed. Even if there's a contractor that's a Gentile contractor that wants to work on Shabbos and he wasn't instructed specifically to work on Shabbos, a person should really close down the site on Shabbos because he could close it down. He can close it down and it should be closed down because it creates a ruach of a workplace ruach on Shabbos if it's within the tchum of Yidden, and the Paiskim are very machmir on that, very very makpid and machmir on building on Shabbos. We discuss real estate management as well. Many parts of real estate management can close on Shabbos. The leasing offices, these could be closed, and if they could be closed, they really chetchila should be closed. But there are certain parts to the real estate industry that unfortunately cannot close. A person has hundreds of units in a building. Inevitably, there will be emergencies that will come up on Shabbos that cannot be pushed off, and if they will be pushed off, they kind of might push the owner out of business. For example, if the heat breaks on Shabbos and it's cold, it's not something that someone could just wait 24 hours for. Legally speaking, it's not something someone could wait, and practically speaking, from a business standpoint, it's just not good business, and you won't stay in business too long. So for that reason, we have owners of real estate have some sort of contingency plan set up where someone may be called a superintendent or a manager or whatever it would be a contact number, and tenants can call them, and emergency service could be kind of put in place for Shabbos. So when you have that, what you have is an employee, because the superintendent is an employee of the owner of the building. You have an employee doing work on behalf of the Jewish employer on Shabbos, and that does present a challenge. Now, depending how we structure this relationship, if we pay this employee, this super per hour, and he works on Shabbos, that's really something that's not allowed. If we pay him for job, and we tell him specifically we don't want you doing work besides for emergencies, that's something that the Paiskim say may be allowed, and that's called Makam Hefsid. But Makam Hefsid, a Kabbalah, may be allowed to work on Shabbos. So depending on the specifics of the case and how we structure this relationship with these employees, there may be a problem and may not be a problem of work being done on Shabbos.
Now, how about with regards to Schar Shabbos?
Schar Shabbos. So with Schar Shabbos, we didn't get into specifics. Maybe this is a good time. We should get into specifics of Schar Shabbos. Schar Shabbos is forbidden to take for any job. Schar Shabbos is, again, the profits that are earned on Shabbos, the services rendered on Shabbos, or earned from a rental on Shabbos. Schar Shabbos is...
So you're talking now about rental income that's earned on Shabbos. Is that what you're referring to?
Right. So let's say we have a rental unit. I own a house, and I'm renting it out to anybody. and I'm receiving money for that rental. So part of the money is coming in for the rental of Shabbos. Part of it's coming in for the rental of the rest of the week. So being that that's the case, some of the money is being earned from the rental of Shabbos. So there would have been a problem. There would be a problem of Schar Shabbos. But the reason why there is not a problem of Schar Shabbos is because the payment is not being paid. The payment is being received not solely for the rental of Shabbos, which means that the tenant is obligated to pay per month, not per day. So that check that the landlord is receiving is a monthly payment. Included in that payment is Shabbos, but it's also weekday. And that's the concept of Havla. Havla means is that the payment absorbs, Havla means absorb, it absorbs Shabbos and weekday. So revenue received for both Shabbos and weekday is called Havla, and that's permitted. In real estate, generally, rentals are done per month, and therefore there wouldn't be a problem with Schar Shabbos. There are kind of parts of real estate which would have a problem if a person owns a parking garage, for example. So what you're really doing is you're renting out the real estate of the parking spot. So a fellow pulls in on Shabbos, if the garage is open on Shabbos, or the parking lot's open on Shabbos, a fellow pulls in on Shabbos and he rents it out for 2 hours. So that specific revenue was money earned solely for Shabbos. There is no other payment here, and there's no part of this payment that's for non-Shabbos, for the weekday. So in such a case, there would be a problem of Schar Shabbos. And I've heard this from my father many times, that the universal, the way people recognized if the property was owned by Olympia York, which was the real estate company owned by the Reichman family, is on Shabbos, all the parking garages and all the parking lots that were owned by Olympia York, they would become automatically free. All the turnstiles, all those blocks that would kind of lift up, they would lift up by Shkia. Around the world, they would lift up by Shkia, and they would be the parking lots and the parking garages would become 100% free over Shabbos. And this was specifically to avoid the problem of Schar Shabbos.
Wow, so that is a Kiddush Hashem. Unbelievable. Okay, so maybe we should turn direct the discussion a little bit to something that's relevant, I think, many Yidden across the United States and across the globe. The phenomenon of the internet retail business websites, or selling on Amazon. A lot of selling fulfillment gets done on Shabbos. Websites usually typically function. I understand that. I think that B&H Photo closes their website down on Shabbos, which is a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. I never checked it out personally, but that's what they say.
I've checked it out. I've been there to Israel, and I've checked it out. And I could confirm that the shopping cart is down.
Okay, so what is the story? What is the real story about websites and fulfillment, Amazon on Shabbos?
Right. So people are surprised to know that the question with websites and selling on Amazon is actually not a new phenomenon. Selling online on the internet is somewhat of a new phenomenon, but we had in the early 1900s, there was a new way of doing commerce, and it was called vending machines. And the Poskim wrote Shuvis on if a Yid is allowed to own a vending machine, which is an automated system set up where anybody can come and put in money in the system and receive goods. So there's a famous Teshuva from the Mashag.
So what would be the issue?
So the issue would be Mekach HaMemka. The issue that we're dealing with...
like a third issue.
Till now we were discussing Amir Lachem and Schar Shabbos. At this point, there's another thing we should address, and that's called Mekach HaMemka. Mekach HaMemka means to buy and sell on Shabbos is forbidden. For a Yid to leave a store open, secondly, and sit by the counter, in addition to maybe a whole bunch of slew of other problems, such as muksa and there are other issues, a person not allowed to do business on Shabbos. But in addition to that, there's the Issur Mekach HaMemka. Chazal it's forbidden for someone to buy and sell items on Shabbos, because usually when you buy and sell something, you'll come to write it down. When a person buys something in the grocery store, they print out a receipt. So that has been done for thousands of years. So because of that, someone might come to write down, Chazal forbid someone to engage in Mekach HaMemka, buying and selling on Shabbos. So the question came, can a person have an automated system, a vending machine set up where he would not be involved in the transaction hands-on? He's home, he's singruch v'simcha, and his vending machine is cranking out products, and money's coming in and products going out. Is that permitted? So the Mashag writes that as long, and his psak is that as long as there was no specifics, it wasn't specifically scheduled for that transaction to take place on Shabbos. We have a Gentile walk up to the machine on his own volition. He decides, I want to purchase this on Shabbos. We didn't time the transaction to take place on Shabbos. So really what we have is a machine doing work for you. And just like we have air conditioners going on and off on Shabbos, that's what we call Shvisas Kalim. A person himself is not allowed to do work on Shabbos, but his equipment, his machinery may continue to do work. A person's allowed to have a light on Shabbos. A person's allowed to put clothing to get dyed on Shabbos. So for the same, in the same vein, a person's machine is kind of operating on his behalf. It's not considered a shlichus, and a person doesn't have to put his machines, so to speak, to rest on Shabbos. So the Mashag writes that there would be no iser to allow the vending machines to continue operating on Shabbos. The opinion of the Mashag, by and large, has been accepted in his time. Bizmanenu, in our times, it's almost, from what I believe, across the board accepted that a Yid is allowed to have a vending machine operating on Shabbos. Sometimes there might be complications if it's in a place where primarily there would be non-observant Jews purchasing on Shabbos, maybe in certain places in Eretz Yisrael. There might be issues of Lifnei Iver, but with that question aside, if a person is predominantly selling to Gentiles, the halacha would be he would not be obligated to close his vending machine. Now, that's benegay a vending machine. When we discuss internet, for a few reasons, an internet sale, what we call a sale, is really much less of a question. And the reason is that when we call an internet purchase, it's not really a purchase at all, because the items are still very much in your under your ownership. The item, you have 15 of something and put an order in online. So there's really two ways how it could happen. First of all, the credit card many times is not charged until the item is actually shipped. So if the credit card is not charged until the item is actually shipped, really what we have is an order. The person ordered something and he gave you his credit card number to pay for it. The same way if somebody called your answering machine and he left a message on the machine on Shabbos, and he said, I'd like to purchase this and this item, and here is my credit card, 1, 2, 3, and he starts giving you the number, right? Most people would understand that nothing happened. He placed an order. Whenever you fill that order, then the transaction will happen. So usually when a purchase, a sale happens online, the credit card is not even charged. Now, even if the credit card is charged, the money, the actual money would not receive, you will not hit your bank account until after Shabbos. The item is still by you. The money is not. You didn't even receive money. So really, in the heart of it, a transaction did not take place. If a transaction does really take place, such as by vending machines, the place can say it's permitted. So there would be for sure by online sales, it would be permitted because we have much less of really a transaction happening, much less of commercial activity taking place, and that would be meikar hadin. With that said, we do find in the Gemara that even when activity on your behalf is allowed, for example, the Gemara brings a story that one is allowed to let a Gentile put a fire out in his property on Shabbos if he doesn't specifically instruct him. The Gemara brings a story. The Gemara says it's a Maisa Chassidus to not allow things to be done on your behalf on Shabbos from a commercial aspect. So for someone to shut down the website on Shabbos, it's a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. I've heard this from my father-in-law many times. He says it's an active Kavod Shabbos. It's a Kavod Shabbos of Fahesia. Someone is actively displaying Kavod Shabbos, and that's definitely praiseworthy. Me'ikra Adin, there would be no halachic problem. This is, again, my father-in-law's opinion of Shlomo Miller. There would be no problem for the list. Shabbos is really, you know, the Yisayit, the Makar HaBracha, the source of all blessing is Shabbos, and I don't think it's wise to neglect that chelik of your business. The same way you really wouldn't neglect any chelik of your business, certainly you should not neglect the halachic part of your business, and specifically as it relates to Shabbos.
That's correct. We very much encourage people, and even if they have a question as to what needs, now, within the setup of your business, you have to have a vision as to what's needed so you can pace yourself when, you know, you're buying a home, right, you're buying a business. People come Friday afternoon, you know, I just closed, I need it tomorrow, I need it yesterday. Somebody wanted to know if it works retroactively, if you can do a Shabbat. I mean, we actually have a division, a Shabbat division. It's worthwhile picking up the phone even to discuss it. We have a team of Rabbanim that are available to answer Shilas in this regard, in regard to all business-related matters. 888-485-8223. 1-888-485-8223 is the number to call. Where we have a team of places that deal with ribbis, with Shabbos, with all different types of halachic issues, monetary business issues, and not to be scared to ask. There is usually 90, almost all the time a solution. It just has to be executed. It has to be dealt with and done properly. The attitude is that these things are problems unless they're dealt with and done correctly, which is, most times a fairly simple procedure just needs to be done. That's really the attitude that we have to have. We're running out of time. We do want to have, we have Rabbi Shmuel Honeywax, who's going to give some of the practical solutions, just a brief overview of the various tools that are available. Rabbi Kushner just asked for some closing remarks. Basically, I think what we just spoke about, just everybody has to be...
This is really the two points that I just want to close with is a person that has a business on Shabbos is really... I think it's really important. A person that has a business running on Shabbos, he should know the basic halachas on Shabbos. Whatever form that educational process should take, whether you open up the Gemara on Shabbos and your test and the Gemara on the Avodah Zarah daf your test and start working through it, and the Mishnah Berurah Siman Reish Mem Gimel, if you have a Rav that you can consult with, a person should consult with, because if a person doesn't know the questions, if a person doesn't know what the questions would even be, then there's really no way that for him to structure properly. That's really the first thing. And the second thing that we just discussed is it would be better off. You're always better off if you ask than if you just kind of keep it inside and say, I'm scared to ask because I'm scared to get the answer. The answers usually are not as scary as you think.
Right. And just a reminder, the book Commerce and Shabbos is extremely clear, and the points there are, it's a very easy read. It's not complicated, even though this sugya is one of the more complicated sugyas in halacha. The issues are clearly delineated, and I think it's worthwhile, at least getting acquainted with the issues. Thank you very much, Rav Kushner.
Thank you for having me.
Enlightening, and Bezer Hashem, we'll be discussing now with Rav Shmuel Honeywax some of the practical solutions to these issues. Thank you very much. Okay, so again, thank you very much, Rabbi Kushner. Very enlightening discussion with regards to the inyonim of Amira La'akum, Schar Shabbos, and how they relate to the real estate industry, to healthcare. We even got into some retail, Amazon, fulfillment center questions that do come up. And we are privileged today to have Rav Honeywax, the one who heads the division of the Shabbos division and is involved in many of the contracts and shtaris that we draft on a regular basis, the Hetrei Iska, etc., an expert in documents and in setting up these types of arrangements. Gut Voch, Rav Honeywax, welcome to the segment.
Gut Voch, Rav Grossman, thank you very much for the introduction. So, obviously, if a person is able to close for Shabbos, he must do so, and under no circumstances should he use any of the methods presented here. Some industries, however, must continue operations on Shabbos, such as a nursing home. We can't exactly tell the patients on Friday afternoon, okay, have a good Shabbos, go home. They don't necessarily have anyone to take care of them.
Right, so we're going to be discussing, Bezrat Hashem, some solutions. What can be done?
So there are basically two options. We'll start with the first option, which is known as the Heter Mechira. It's a more commonly used and more prevalent option. It's developed in the 1800s by the Dibur Chaim. He used this option to allow someone to run his factory on Shabbos. Now, the mechira is what it sounds like. Basically, you're selling or leasing your business to somebody who's not obligated to observe Shabbos for all the Shabbosim and Yom Tovim of the year. Now, a buyer doesn't have to be anybody within the business. It doesn't have to be anybody in your corporation. He can be some random person, just like we do by mechira. We find anybody that we decide to use to sell the chametz to. In the same manner, we would just sell the business or lease it to anybody, any random person who's not obligated to observe Shabbos, and that would, according to the Rechaim, allow you to keep the business running on Shabbos.
One second, this is based on, I mean, a tshuva from the Rechaim.
Right. The Rechaim has a tshuva about it in Rechaim Chelik Aleph Siman Vav Zayin. He actually writes a sample shtar over there to show you exactly how it's done. Now, there are protections put in. Obviously, if you're selling your business, you're putting yourself at risk to a certain extent.
Who is? The seller?
Well, the seller and the buyer are entering into a contract where, I guess, each person is accepting upon themselves certain obligations that they may not have otherwise wanted to accept upon themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We have to construct these contracts in a way that each party is protected as much as possible, and that is done by putting in a very high purchase price, something which we hope the buyer will not be interested and or able to come up with. And we say that as long as the buyer has not paid the purchase price, he will not be able to take control of the business, and the business will be held as collateral by the seller.
So that's done to protect
that's
the seller.
That's being done to protect the seller. So in that way, the buyer is not able to control the company. He can't do anything to harm the company. He can't shut it down. He can't do anything negative to the company as long as he hasn't come up with the money, which is obviously a somewhat inflated price, to make sure that he doesn't actually take control of the business. And the buyer is protected because we put a clause in the contract that says that the buyer is not obligated to pay the money out of his pocket. He's only obligated to pay it out of the profits of the company. Whatever profits the company generates, those profits are going to be obligated to pay for the purchase price, but the buyer himself, there will be no recourse against the buyer personally to pay for the purchase price.
So what you're saying is that the business is sold, the payment is basically holding paper, the payment is not given right away, because obviously a buyer would not have the ability or have the will to come up with the millions of dollars. It could be huge companies that are being dealt with. So there's basically sort of like a mortgage that's a loan that's issued to the buyer, and the buyer pays it out. And that's basically how it's structured, that the business is sold for Shabbos. There's an actual sale that takes place, and just to protect the buyer. The buyer also doesn't want to be obligated to pay huge amounts of mortgage, interest and principal on this loan. So it's stipulated in the agreement that the only funds that are encumbered for this debt would be the profits, the money coming from the business, the profits from the business, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess the first question that comes to mind would be, like, wouldn't the employees still be considered like being employees of the owner? Like, how does that work? How does that matter anything?
Right. So like we heard before from Rabbi Kushner, there's a very serious issue of when you have somebody paid hourly or daily to work for you on Shabbos, that's a very serious issue. Even if you don't make them work on Shabbos, it'll still be a problem. So Divrei Chaim mentions that. He says, obviously, the workers in the company are still going to be considered workers of the original owner, the seller, because he's the one who instructs them to work. Like we said, he's the one who has control over the business as long as the buyer hasn't paid the money. So therefore, there's no question that the workers are his workers. Nevertheless, the Divrei Chaim says that's not a problem. Why? He invokes a very famous principle called Bashel B'Shvilcha. The halacha, according to some achrayim, is that if I give a piece of meat to somebody on Shabbos and tell him, cook this meat, eat for yourself, you want
to
eat meat.
To an Eini Yehudi, obviously, right?
Okay. Right, obviously, Eini Yehudi, someone who's not obligated to keep Shabbos. I tell him, here's this meat, cook it for yourself. According to some achrayim, that's permitted. Even though the person is only doing the malacha, the work on Shabbos, because of the fact that I instructed him to do so, and I gave him the ability to do so, I handed him the piece of meat, and enabled him to do this work on Shabbos. Nevertheless, since the owner of the meat, the person who's giving the meat, isn't the one who stands to benefit from the work that's being done on Shabbos, rather the recipient is the one who stands to benefit, according to some Achronim, that's permitted. That's not considered Amir La'akum. The Divrei Chaim says, likewise, when you sell a company to somebody who's not obligated to keep Shabbos, even though the workers in the company are working upon the instruction of the seller, nevertheless, since the buyer is the one who's actually going to be owning the profits of the company, all the profits accrue to the benefit of the buyer, therefore, the workers are working to benefit the buyer, they're working upon the instruction of the seller to benefit the buyer, and that would not be considered an Isra of Amir La'akum on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm. So that wouldn't be a problem of Amir La'akum. But, you know, in essence, you mentioned that the only monies that are encumbered that the buyer would have to pay are only for the profits of the business. Is that correct?
Yeah.
They wouldn't have to pay anything out of pocket. So wouldn't it, wouldn't it seem like if the better the business does, that's the more the seller would be able to get to, you know, recover this debt that the buyer now owes them, this huge debt. So wouldn't that be considered like benefiting the seller would benefit from those profits?
Right. So that's a very good question. Actually, in the Divrei Chaim contract that he wrote, he doesn't have the specific clause where the buyer is not obligated to pay out of his pocket only from the profits of the business. However, the Gedolei HaPoskim in the recent generation after the war did write such shtaris. I've heard that there's a shtar from Rav Moshe to this effect, and other Gedolim have written such shtaris. So I asked Rav Shlomo Miller this question that, according to what we're saying, that the whole hetzer of the Divrei Chaim is that the benefit of the work is accruing to the buyer. In this case, that wouldn't necessarily be true. So he told me that he feels that this is too indirect to cause there to be an issue. In other words, since the profits really are accruing to the benefit of the buyer, although the buyer is then obligated to transfer those profits to the seller until he pays the money, that would not be considered a direct benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also, you could put it into the contract that it may be possible under certain circumstances. You know, if the only contract is being held by the buyer, you can actually put into the contract that that buyer has to pay the money regardless. The buyer may not feel that he's at risk.
Yeah.
You know, you have to know if you can find somebody who's willing to sign such a contract.
Yeah, so it's a little more difficult to execute, but that would be a more difficult. So how would you categorize, you know, this option? Is this something that should be relied on l'chatchila? Is this something that, you know, obviously, you know, we come across many times, Rabbanim come to us with, especially people in Kiruv and, in, you know, dealing with less affiliated Yidden, that this is really, you know, this is the only option. You know, we're really a little bit at their mercy because they, you know, they're open on Shabbos and they're really, you know, if it takes too much, then they wouldn't change the structure. They wouldn't put it at risk. Sometimes their legal team gets involved, and they have to make sure that everything's on the up and up. And you know, obviously, if we're dealing with the other option of just being open on Shabbos, we have to try to find any heter possible. But you know, would you for the average from Yid that's going into business, opening a business, or has already one of these facilities that are functioning, would you classify this as a recommended option? Are there any other options? What's your view on this heter mechira option?
So, like we mentioned, this heter is based on one opinion in the Achronim. The Divrei Chaim obviously feels that we can rely on that opinion. There certainly are grounds to be more machmir if somebody is able to. And if we can develop another method that may be a worthwhile endeavor, because of the fact that we would like to satisfy all the opinions or as many opinions as possible.
Mm-hmm. So what else is out there? What other options does a person have?
So just before we get to another option, I just want to mention that, you know, if a person doesn't have another option, he certainly can be soimich on this because Divrei Chaim gave this heter and the point custom is to rely on this heter. But there is another option called arisus. That was a recent innovation. This was developed by Rav Shlomo Miller.
Explain that. What is the word arisus?
So basically, this option relies on a convergence of two separate concepts halachically. Number one, we create a framework where the owner does not directly employ all the employees who work on Shabbos. In other words, we create a contract that says that the owner has no ability to hire or fire any employees in the business. The hiring and firing ability is delegated to a manager who is not obligated to observe Shabbos. And therefore, a buffer zone has been created between the owner and the workers. Thereby, perhaps, Rabbi Miller argues, this would create a situation where the workers are not considered schira yoim as far as Shabbos is concerned. Although, when it comes to taxes or other kind of issues, lawsuits, litigations, these kind of things, certainly the workers would be able to sue the owner and they would be able to hold the owner responsible for their employment. Nevertheless, when it comes to Shabbos, Rabbi Miller believes that the main defining point that we have to think about is whether or not you have the ability to hire and fire the workers, and by extension, you have the ability to tell them what to do. If you can't hire or fire them, that would probably mean that you don't have the ability to instruct them to act and behave in a certain way, because since you can't fire them on Shabbos, you also, if they don't work, so you have no recourse to force them to work on Shabbos. That's the first concept that we're using. Nevertheless, that wouldn't necessarily suffice, because although the manager is considered to be employing the employee, not the owner, nevertheless, the manager is only running the business to benefit the owner. The manager receives a set salary. Let's say he makes $200,000 a year, whatever it is, depending on how successful your business happens to be. But whatever it is, the manager, the only incentive for the manager to actually run the business would be to benefit the owner, because he's not getting a share of the profits. So although the workers are not the workers of the owner, since the manager is telling them to work to benefit the owner, that would also present the problem to us on Shabbos. So in order to satisfy that problem, we introduced the concept of arisus, which is that if the manager has any kind of benefit from the profits, in other words, if he gets a small share of the profits, let's say 1%, whatever amount of money would reasonably motivate him to run the business efficiently, that would allow us to assume halachically, as far as Shabbos is concerned, that the reason why the manager is keeping the business open on Shabbos is not to benefit the owner of the business, but rather in order to maximize his share of the profit, and therefore work is not being done by the workers of the owner, and the work is not being done to benefit the owner. It's being done additionally to benefit the manager, and that would allow us to keep the business open on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, depending on the structure, depending on the, you know, there are other areas. I mean, obviously when you deal with a healthcare facility or a nursing home, there's issues of kashrus and treifas that come up, serving various foods, and you know, that's a whole different topic. But these are, you know, basically the two most prevalent shtaris that are put forth and that are drafted. You know, depending, each business really has to consult and figure out exactly the best way to go about what they're doing based on the structure. And I think it's pretty clear, like we mentioned earlier, these things can be done and not too scary, but they just need to be done, you know, effectively. So I think we've covered the bases, right? And you know, we thank you very much, Rabbi Honeywax, for explaining how these things work. Obviously they are quite technical, but as Rabbi Kushner explained, it is very important to understand what you're doing. You know, there is the issue of harama, which is when a document is not really serious. It's just like a document that people don't really, and they just sign, you know, to make it kosher. That is less effective halachically. So we do have to understand what we're doing and realize that this is a real transaction. This has real ramifications, both halakhically and legally. And just to figure out, you know, Rav Honeywax is available to direct whoever needs direction as to what is, you know, the preferred option for them. And, you know, we thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us, Rav Honeywax. And thank you for your service to Klal Yisrael. This is, as we explained, a very sensitive, serious area of halacha, something that needs to be addressed properly. And you know, and Baruch Hashem, the tools are out there. They just need to be effectuated.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, and have a good Vach.
Okay, thank you very much for your time, and a good Vach to all the listeners. Thank you for joining us, and Bez Hashem, we'll speak hopefully in the future as well. A good Vach.